listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
France's President Emmanuel Macron addressed his nation on television Monday from Paris. We bring you his comments in their entirety.
Françaises, Français, nous voilà ensemble au rendez-vous de notre pays et de notre avenir.
Dear people of France,
les événements de ces dernières semaines dans l'Hexagone et Outre-mer ont profondément troublé la nation. Ils ont mêlé des revendications légitimes et un enchaînement de violences inadmissibles. Et je veux vous le dire d'emblée.
I have driven us to some violent clashes, which is unacceptable, and I would like to say that there is no excuse for this violence, and there will be no pardon to those who caused it. We saw the opportunists to try and take advantage of the mood in the people, which has reason, and some tried to take advantage of it and saw dissent.
Qu'on dégrade un commerce ou des bâtiments publics.
There is no justification to the anger
and to all those violent clashes que d'autres peuvent ne pas les partager sans que personne n'ait à avoir peur de ces désaccords.
Everyone has right to their opinions, but in a way,
la liberté cesse.
That allows for the others to oppose that opinion. As soon as violence starts, this freedom ends.
Nous y mettrons
so
tous les moyens.
We need to restore the state order, and we're going to take all measures required to do so, because we can't build anything that would be permanent under such circumstances that does not allow for civil liberty and
au début de tout cela,
security.
Je n'oublie pas qu'il y a une colère.
So I issued some very strict orders to my government, but I'm not forgetting that
there is
some people are unhappy, and many of our citizens are not happy indeed.
Ce fut d'abord la colère contre une taxe. Le Premier ministre a apporté une réponse en annulant et en supprimant toutes les augmentations prévues pour le début de l'année prochaine.
A right to indignation,
cette colère est plus profonde.
And, people
je
indeed
la ressens comme
are
juste
indignant
à bien des
égards. Tax measures.
Peut-être notre chance.
We feel that.
C'est celle du couple de salariés qui ne finit pas le mois et se lève chaque jour tôt et revient tard
this indignation
pour aller travailler
and this
c'est celle de la mère de famille, célibataire, veuve ou
certainly
divorcée qui ne vit même plus, qui n'a pas les moyens de faire garder les enfants et d'améliorer ses fins de mois et n'a plus d'espoir.
How divorced people and widows sometimes live, making their ends meet. Barely. These people have a very hard life.
Qui ont contribué toute leur vie et souvent aident à la fois parents et enfants et ne s'en sortent pas.
Also went out
c'est celle des
to
plus
protest
fragiles,
on streets.
Des personnes en situation de handicap dont la place dans la société
certainly
n'est pas encore
I understand that it's not easy on these people.
Mais
the most disadvantaged citizens that we have, like challenged people, they do have a hard life.
Tout se passait
but
comme
unfortunately,
s'ils étaient oubliés,
we started to get used to that, which is unacceptable. They began feeling that they
malaise
were
des travailleurs
forgotten.
Qui ne s'y retrouvent plus. Malaise des territoires, villages comme quartiers, où on voit les services publics se réduire et le cadre de vie disparaître. Malaise démocratique, où se développe le sentiment de ne pas être entendu. Malaise face au changement de notre société, à une laïcité bousculée et devant des modes de vie qui créent des barrières, de la distance.
A lot across the country. And the local authorities were contributing to that in a way.
Sans doute,
the gap between the layers in society has been growing and this social unrest tensions was increasing.
Il a pu
and it has been impossible to fix that in recent years. And I understand my responsibility for all of
je
that.
Sais aussi qu'il m'est arrivé de blesser certains d'entre vous.
I don't want to say that I was busy with doing some other
je
things. I may have offended some
si
of you with
battu,
what I have been saying. But today I would like to say
place,
honestly and openly
les hypocrisies.
That I
c'est précisément parce que je crois plus que tout dans notre pays que je l'aime. Et ma légitimité.
Which
je ne m'attire d'aucun titre, d'aucun parti,
and
d'aucune
unjust.
Coterie.
And
je
I
ne m'attire
to
que
do
de
so
vous,
because I love my country.
De nul autre. Nombre
I'm
d'autres
not
pays traversent
by...
le mal vivre qui est le nôtre. Mais je crois profondément que nous pouvons trouver une voie pour en
something
sortir tous ensemble.
That
je le
no
veux pour la France,
to, but I would like to,
parce que c'est notre vocation, au travers de l'histoire, d'ouvrir ainsi des chemins jamais explorés pour nous-mêmes et pour le monde.
France.
Je le veux pour nous tous, Français,
I believe that
parce qu'un peuple qui se divise à ce point,
we need to find
qui ne respecte plus ses lois, et l'amitié qui doit l'unir,
make the life
c'est un peuple
of our people in our country better.
Je le veux aussi parce
to make sure we do not turn into a country that does not respect itself, does not respect its own people. I've been feeling that this crisis is coming up. I felt that before the election, and that's why I decided to run for president.
C'est l'état d'urgence économique et sociale que je veux décréter aujourd'hui. Nous voulons bâtir une France du mérite, du travail,
today,
une France où nos enfants vivront mieux que nous.
Admit that
cela ne peut se faire que par
today,
une meilleure école,
I'm
des universités, de l'apprentissage et des formations qui apprennent aux plus jeunes et aux moins jeunes ce qu'il faut
country.
Pour vivre libre
we
et travailler.
To support
l'investissement dans
our
la nation,
economy.
Dans l'école et la formation
we need
est inédit.
To support our youth,
et je le confirme.
Those young people
nous
who
voulons
want
une France
to continue studying
où l'on peut vivre
and
dignement de son travail.
Sur ce point, to become a country where people can live off the fruit of their work. And we have been too slow moving on that track
to become in such a country.
Je demande
au gouvernement et au Parlement de faire le nécessaire afin qu'on puisse vivre mieux de son travail dès le début d'année prochaine. Le salaire d'un travailleur au SMIC augmentera de 100 euros par mois dès 2019 sans qu'il en coûte un euro de plus pour l'employeur. Je veux renouer
the
avec
minimal,
que le surcroît de travail accepté constitue un surcroît de revenus.
Adjusted and increased
les
by 100 euros par mois,
sans impôt,
starting in May 2019.
Et je veux qu'une vraie amélioration
also
soit tout de suite
acceptée.
C'est pourquoi je demanderai à tous les employeurs qui le peuvent de verser une prime de fin d'année à leurs employés. Et cette prime n'aura à acquitter ni impôt,
overtime,
ni charge.
Labor, And also we're going to introduce special tax-free incentives, bonuses for people, for those who earn less than 2,000 euros per month.
Et il n'était pas juste.
And there also will be tax deductions
le Premier ministre présentera l'ensemble de ses décisions
as of tomorrow.
Mais
Prime Minister is going to propose.
J'ai besoin que nos grandes entreprises, nos concitoyens les plus fortunés aident la nation à
present his proposal to the government.
Je les réunirai et prendrai des décisions en ce sens dès cette
will be
semaine.
Only one measure.
Je sais que certains voudraient, dans ce contexte, que je revienne sur la réforme de l'impôt sur la fortune.
Pendant près de 40 ans, il y a existé. Discuss all the necessary changes.
Les plus riches partaient et notre pays s'affaiblissait.
Conformément
aux engagements pris devant vous, cet impôt a été supprimé pour ceux qui investissent dans notre économie et donc aide à créer des emplois.
We can say that this tax we already had did not really help us
pour ceux qui ont une fortune immobilière.
Because many people would just leave the country to avoid paying it.
Alors même que nous sommes en train de recréer
so
des emplois.
We replaced the wealth tax with the property tax.
Le gouvernement et le Parlement devront aller plus loin pour mettre fin aux avantages induits et aux évasions fiscales.
Would,
le dirigeant d'une entreprise française doit
industries.
Payer ses impôts en France. Et les grandes entreprises, s'ils font du profit, doivent y payer
l'impôt.
C'est la simple justice.
And tax fraud,
vous le voyez,
and we're going to
nous répondrons à l'urgence économique
too.
Et sociale par des mesures fortes, par des baisses d'impôts plus rapides, par une meilleure maîtrise des
it's
dépenses
a difficult economic situation.
Plutôt que par des
reculs. And we're going to respond
J'entends
with some urgent
que le gouvernement
measures
poursuive l'ambition des transformations de notre pays que le peuple a choisi il y a maintenant
18
ans. Nous avons devant nous à conduire une réforme profonde de l'État, de l'indemnisation du chômage et des retraites. Elles sont indispensables. Nous voulons des règles plus justes, plus simples, plus claires.
Government, we need to reform the social support and benefits system. It needs to become more transparent and more efficient.
Pour la France et pour l'Europe.
We need to,
c'est pourquoi le débat national annoncé doit être beaucoup plus large.
Pursue a social
cela,
project.
Nous devons avant toute chose
and
assumer
I would like to propose a national dialogue for that. I would like everyone
le devoir de
to
produire
pour
pouvoir
that.
Redistribuer.
We need all
le devoir
to work.
D'apprendre pour être un citoyen libre.
We need
le devoir
to produce,
de changer
manufacture,
pour tenir compte de l'urgence de notre dette
the products of our work. We need to
réussir.
Work on education.
Nous devons nous rassembler et aborder ensemble
we
toutes les questions essentielles.
Fight for improvement of the environmental situation in our country.
La possibilité de voir les courants d'opinion mieux entendus dans leur diversité,
all
une loi électorale plus juste, la prise en compte
situation.
Du vote blanc, et même que soit admis
all
à participer
of society
au débat
need
des citoyens n'appartenant
participate
pas
in that, and their voices
je veux que soit posée la question de l'équilibre de notre fiscalité pour qu'elle permette à la fois la justice et l'efficacité du pays.
Everyone.
Je veux que soit posée la question de notre quotidien
needs to be balanced
pour faire face au changement climatique, se loger,
so that the,
se déplacer,
government,
se chauffer.
The state machine would
les bonnes
be more efficient in the ways it works.
Je veux que soit posée la question de l'organisation de l'État, de la manière dont il est gouverné et administré depuis Paris, sans doute trop centralisé depuis des décennies, et la question du service public dans tous nos territoires. Je veux aussi que nous mettions d'accord la nation avec elle-même, ce qui est son identité profonde, que nous abordions la question de l'immigration.
To il nous faut understand what it is, we also need
les
to discuss
de
immigration.
Demandent une réflexion profonde et
it's
partagée.
An important issue.
Impose un débat
all
sans
this
précédent.
Requires
il devra se dérouler au niveau national.
A dialogue
dans nos
which has
chacun y aura
not
sa part.
Seen precedent.
Gouvernement, assemblée,
all institutions need to participate in it. The government and the National
vous
Assembly, all the social
je veux en assurer moi-même la coordination
you,
en recevoir
of you
les avis
play an important
pour rendre ainsi le pouls vivant de notre pays.
I would like to be a coordinator of that process and make sure that this process involves our entire country. And these discussions not only represent certain institutions, but all the regions of our country.
Ce sont les maires.
All citizens of our country need to have people to talk to. These could be city and town mayors. So I'm going to meet in person all the city and town mayors across our country just to create that foundation for the national dialogue.
Souvent par le passé dans des crises semblables,
and
sans que rien n'ait été
we all would like to go back to our normal lives, but this crisis
nous sommes à un moment historique
has to be the one that ends differently from the previous ones. It is a historical moment for our country.
L'engagement.
And I would like this crisis to end through a fruitful
nous sommes à la tâche,
positive dialogue
et je reviendrai m'exprimer devant
would lead
vous
us
pour
to success.
Mon seul souci,
I am going to
mon seul combat,
talk to you once again in order to report
bataille.
On some achievements and what I'm doing and what I'm fighting
Vive
for
la
is for you.
Vive la France.
This is the fight for France. Vive la France.
That was the President of France, Emmanuel Macron, addressing his nation via television Monday. This past weekend, Russia's largest political organization, United Russia, held its 18th Party Congress. It's the political party of President Vladimir Putin. He addressed the conference this past Saturday.
Thank you
very much.
Уважаемые коллеги,
colleagues,
друзья,
friends,
Дмитрий Анатольевич,
Mr. Medvedev,
я очень рад приветствовать всех
I'm very
вас
happy
на очередном 18th
to welcome all of you to the 18th Congress of United Russia. This is a major political event, and it takes place shortly before Constitution Day. I'm very grateful for your support during the election. And, this is what I would like to say in this context. It's really important to form the top institution of power in the country, regardless of specific person. Of course, names are important, but behind every name there should be a specific program.
This
is true about President and all the other levels of government, unless you have a clear vision of what needs to be done and how it should be done for the country. There is nothing for you in the government. Because the government is not for people to get there and just relax and do nothing, enjoy sitting in a big chair. No. Responsible people, and we are responsible people. Responsible people should be different. Our program in a condensed form is presented in the presidential decree published in May, and then it was presented in detail in national projects prepared by the government. As you know, most members of the government represent United Russia. They were supported at a legislative level, and again, we have a controlling stake in the State Duma. But regional dimension is also very important, because that's where most of the work is being done. We need support of United Russia at the regional and municipal levels. We have to realize that, and we should work as a team, given our common goals. And United Russia will play a very special role in this matter. We have special responsibility for the future of our country, for the welfare of our people. This is what makes every political force strong, especially the leading political force, caring for the welfare of people, strengthening your country's sovereignty, developing the economy,
ответственность за успешное решение масштабных прорывных задач, которые стоят сегодня перед нами.
Breakthrough goals that we set for ourselves. As I said, United Russia plays a special role for many years. We've been very consistent in making important decisions, explaining these decisions to people, and later campaigning and persuading the voters that the decisions we made earlier were correct, and the path we've been following is the only right path. But I'd like to say something. There are some complications along this way as well. I'll talk about this later. But this is
лидерство не в том, чтобы обещать манну небесную, которая возьмется не
to be a leader does not mean to make empty promises.
Чтобы принимать ответственные нужные
решения. No. To be a leader means to make important decisions which will eventually benefit the country. But you have to go to people and explain to them. You have to talk to people directly. You have to explain your decisions to people. You have to explain why this decision is the best for our country right now. Leadership is a tremendous resource for achieving our goals. Like I said, the May decree has set these goals. We need to achieve breakthrough development. Only this will help us improve the quality of life of our people and strengthen our country's sovereignty. Put Russia at a decent place in the world. Those sitting in this room and other members of United Russia, any person actually, they live their life in the morning, they wake up, go to work, in the evening they go home, talk to their family, take care of their daily matters. People rarely think about where we are. People rarely look at analytics. But I would like to tell you, the world is undergoing a major transformation. And unless we see this and understand what we need to do right now, we may end up lagging behind forever. It's a dramatic situation for our country and for the whole world. We have to understand that, and we have to be very active right now.
I think United Russia
and its tremendous legislative organizational potential should take full advantage of the situation. We need to help our society develop. Push the nation forward. You have your representatives everywhere, at every level of government, in every area. And most of these people are very decent people, patriots, professionals. But at the same time,
происходит всегда и везде, во все времена
actually,
и во всех местах.
Есть и те, которые просто конъюнктурой, с удовольствием just take advantage of the situation. They want to be in power. They want to be members of the leading political party. And of course, there are people who don't conduct themselves properly. So I would like you to keep an eye on that. Never allow yourself to be like that at any level.
Потому что это,
from
во-первых, вредно для страны.
The top all the way
это несправедливо
to the bottom,
в отношении
because that's
людей.
Unfair, that's
это
bad for the country, that's bad for people. And this is humiliating for the party. And I really like the fact that the party is undergoing renewal right now. Like Mr. Medvedev said, we have new people coming in, new faces, and this will only make our party stronger. You know, of course, that people want the party to be frank, honest, and to be like that, We don't need some abstract phrases and words. We should really listen to people. We should hear people. We should be with people. People should know who their representatives are. They should feel free to contact you anytime. It's really important to check all your plans with talking to people.
Of real consultations with them.
Of course, there are many opinions, and you can only make one decision. And it's not always to make everybody happy. People may have different opinions. There are many people, many opinions. So what you need is respect. You need to show respect for people. You should explain your position to them. Of course, to do that, you have to have a position. And we do. We do have a position on almost every important issue. Still, we should listen to people more. We should support their initiatives and use their initiatives to achieve our common goal, especially at a local municipal level. For example, if you have to make a decision about urban planning, local development, you absolutely have to listen to people. People's recommendations are always practical, genuine,
устремление общества. Да, собственно, что значит общество?
Уважаемые коллеги, впереди время
напряженной
большой работы. We have a very difficult period ahead of us, and this will determine our country's future. We need to work hard. We need to be active.
Не бояться ответственности.
We shouldn't be afraid of responsibility. We should work together for our common good. People need to see that United Russia has talented, honest, hard-working people among its members. The party should grow as you work on specific projects, and people all over the country, in every city, in every village, should see and realize that it is United Russia who is not afraid of change, that achieves real change. Now, I would like to add a few more words. It is very important for the party to make sure that its reputation is strong and high. And it's very hard to earn a good reputation. To do that, you need to work hard, you need to listen to people, you need to address their problems, fight injustice, and never do any justice yourselves. Like I said, we have a lot of young people coming in, so I would recommend that you take advantage of young managers' contests that we have going on around the country. We have an open democratic country, and we need creative people open to new approaches. Discussions, competition within the party is a productive instrument for advancing our national interest. And I'm confident that United Russia will do everything necessary for promoting this kind of political culture in the party, dialogue, discussion, cooperation with all political forces in Russia. Being the largest political force in Russia, I want United Russia to go to a whole new level and become a new breakthrough party. I wish the best of luck in this work to all of us, all of you. Thank you very much.
2 years into the so-called Russiagate investigation, there's still no hard evidence of collusion between the Trump election campaign, WikiLeaks, or the Russian government. This past week, Black Agenda Radio's Glenn Ford spoke with Dan Kovalik, who's a longtime activist and author. Kovalik's latest book, titled The Plot to Scapegoat Russia, How the CIA and the Deep State Have Conspired to Vilify Putin, suggests that the spinners of the Russiagate tale were trying to destroy any chance that a peace movement will reemerge in the U.S.
That project has worked quite well and effectively, as it did at times during the first Cold War between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. It's working in the very same way now, one, instilling fear in people in the United States of Russia as somehow an enemy. First of all, an enemy of the U.S., but also a seemingly omnipotent enemy that could even swing a U.S. election somehow. And so, and what has worked incredibly about it is that it has really worked mostly on liberals in the U.S. who may otherwise be interested in organizing around war and peace. And it has really silenced the peace movement.
Yes, the insidious wrinkle with Russiagate is that folks who challenge those charges are associated with Trump.
Yes, absolutely. Right, you're seen as a Trump apologist, whether Russia somehow impacted the 2016 elections. And again, very few people want to be called a Trump apologist for good reasons. I mean, Trump is awful in many ways. But the thing is, there's a lot to criticize him about. Russia happens not to be one of them. I mean, it's one of the good things that he at least appeared to want to do, and that is has some sort of rapprochement with Russia. And this Russiagate scandal has effectively destroyed any ability to have detente with Russia. And now we're seeing a possible, really military confrontation with Russia, with a U.S. naval ship now entering the Black Sea as we speak.
Russiagate is interesting from the standpoint of American exceptionalism, which says, among many other things, that there are terrible people out there in the world who just hate America because of our freedoms and what we have. And Putin is classified as one of those people, and they just want to stir up dissension in the United States.
Right. And of course, the irony is that to the extent people have issues with the United States outside the U.S., it's not because of our freedoms, but it's because the U.S. has done such an effective job at repressing freedom and democracy throughout the world. Quite contrary to, of course, what the U.S. claims. The U.S. has claimed very effectively for over a century that we intervene in the world to spread democracy and freedom and justice. But in fact, we do quite the opposite. And those who have suffered U.S. intervention are quite painfully aware of that. Meanwhile, of course, at home, we have a society that's very unequal, that has suffered from slavery, from systematic racism, from genocidal attacks on indigenous populations here. We don't need Russia to remind us of those things. Again, most people in this country who are paying attention, at least, are painfully aware of those problems. And the idea that somehow Russia was needed to stir those up is a joke.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Worlds Apart. Populism is such a popular political allegation these days that it's almost lost its meaning. Isn't all politics populism of some sort or another? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Carl Hagen, a veteran Norwegian politician and former vice president of the Norwegian parliament. Mr. Hagen, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Now,
welcome.
You were described as a political populist long before this word became trendy. What is populism for you, and isn't any democratically elected politician a populist to some extent?
Of course, you have to be popular in order to be elected. And the word populism was used as a negative, you know, that was not a good politician, he was a populist. To me, that's been an honor to be called a populist, because basically a populist speaks to the average person, not to the elite, not to the managers and lawyers, but to the average citizen.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about average citizen, those citizens are actually very, very different. How do you make sure that you appeal to both, let's say, a worker and a lawyer? That takes quite a skill, isn't it?
It's very difficult when you are on television. But if you are out speaking, you know, holding speeches, you meet them not together, but in different groups. Mm-hmm. And then I used to adopt to the people I was talking to with my clothes and how I talked and if I could swear or not. And, you know, I adopted and tried to be similar so that they should think he's one of them. Mm-hmm. That was my method.
Now, your brand of politics is to the right of center.
No.
Well, at least that's how people in
people
Norway describe
say that. I maintain that the Progress Party, when I was the leader, was between the Conservative Party and the Labour Party. We took the best from the Conservative Party, the market economic thinking, and the social consciousness of the Labour Party, which was a mixture in the middle.
Well, there was also a layer of anti-immigrant sentiment there. I think you were also quite pro-nationalist, if I may put it that way. When you were beginning, those kind of ideas were much less accepted, much less widespread than they are today. Why do you think this right-wing or centre, whatever you put it, sentiment is getting so much more popular these days?
Immigration was not a big issue in the 70s. It started in the 80s. And I could see that in the world, a lot of the, let's say, civil wars and conflicts were between different ethnic groups, different religion, different way of behaving and thinking. Norway was a homogeneous society. If we get a lot of immigrants from the third world, we could have conflicts in the future. And therefore, I warned against the immigration. In addition, it's very costly. Mm-hmm. Immigrants pay less tax, less duties, and receive a lot more welfare.
Mm-hmm. Well, Norway, from what I know, is still fairly moderate when it comes to immigration. I mean, you cannot compare it to Sweden or Germany, which would be far more extreme. But I know that Norway is very centered on human rights and the idea of being a force for good in the world. How do you reconcile your anti-immigrant rhetoric with how the most of Norwegians see themselves as a country that wants to be a force for good?
Well, also in Norway, people see themselves politically correct, but inside they are thinking differently. And when you say that Norway is different from Sweden, yes, thanks to the Progress Party, which I was a leader for 28 years, because we went up in the opinion polls if immigrants came too many. So the other political parties could not do what they did in Sweden because they knew they would lose voters to the Progress Party.
Now, according to a recent Guardian survey, populist parties have more than tripled their support in Europe in the last 20 years, with that shift beginning at least in 1998. Do you think that's the limit? Do you think that growing anti-establishment, sometimes anti-immigrant sentiment, has reached its peak, or is it going to become even bigger?
It's going to grow until the political leaders of the establishment start to listen to the people. We've just in France had a lot of riots because they were increasing the petrol tax. Average normal people don't believe in the climate hysteria. I don't either. And the cost of living is going up. And the political leaders are not listening to the protests from the average people. They have to adopt. Mm-hmm. And if your populist parties are growing, in the end, the leaders will have to listen and change their policy and be more interested in their own citizens.
Well, maybe many people would argue that's already happening as populist parties are becoming more mainstream. Mainstream parties are also becoming more populist. Can you really tell one from another these days?
It's very difficult, and it's changing from country to country. And also, of course, some populist parties are coupled with their leaders. That's happened in Greece with the now prime minister. It's happened with the French National Front, which have now changed the name. That's going to change as time goes by. as it happened to, let's say, my party in Norway.
I think that change has been most visible, perhaps, in the United States. And in the run-up to the 2016 American elections, Hillary Clinton famously called Donald Trump's electorate as a basket of deplorables. And she accused him of giving them a voice as if it was a political crime. Do you think that Western democracies, at least until now, have been based on the idea that certain type of voters, certain type of ideas will never be part of the discourse?
It's changing, and of course it's changed a lot in America with Donald Trump being elected president. And I think a lot of the people voting for Donald Trump did that because they did not want Hillary Clinton. They did not like Hillary Clinton, part of the establishment, foreign policy, hawk, and she was dangerous.
So it was not so much his success as her failure, is that what you're saying?
Yes, they didn't want her. So and the other alternative became Donald Trump, because he was speaking to the average people. He was different, and people wanted something different, something new, not the establishment. And that's happening now in countries also in Europe.
I know you were quite supportive of Trump when he was running, and soon after he was elected, you called him, as you said just now, a man of the people, and you compared him to Ronald Reagan. But I think Ronald Reagan had a very different public persona. He had a talent for charming his political opponents. Do you think that's really one of Trump's talents?
No, that is not. And he's doing mistakes, and he's big in his mouth, and there's a lot of things I don't like Donald Trump for doing. But he's new. It's a fresh chance for many things. And, you know, he's spoken to the leader of North Korea, and I would have hoped he would get a much better relationship with Russia and President Putin as well.
Well, I hope we can discuss that as well. But in addition to talking to the leader of North Korea, he also damaged American relationship with its traditional partners. I'm not sure Norway could be included, because I think your relationship are more or less the same. But when it comes to Germany, when it comes to the UK, do you think what he's doing is really in the best interest of both America and Europe?
Yes, I do so. Because many presidents have said that the European NATO states has to pay a larger share or their common defense. But they haven't meant it. They haven't done anything about it. He's pressurizing the European members of NATO to spend more money on defense. So he's a tougher negotiator. The European countries have taken the friendship with the United States for granted. And the United States will always be there to help us. He said, no, you have to do something more yourself. And he's thinking more of the American taxpayer, which German leaders like Angela Merkel took it for granted that the American taxpayer should pay for the defense of Germany. Mm-hmm. He says America first, like I say, Norway and Norwegian population first. Mm-hmm. Every political leader should think about his own country first and then helping others.
Mm-hmm. Now, Norway is a founding member of NATO. It also, from what I know, pays more per capita into NATO's budget than many other European nations. What do you make of the recent announcements by both the German Chancellor and the French President of their intention to create a European or pan-European party? Is that a good idea?
No, that's not a good idea.
Why not?
The strength of NATO as such is still America. And if you have a split between America and European NATO countries, then we are doing the same mistake as was happening after the First World War. And you would be able then to get a possibility of a European conflict between, let's say, the West and Russia. And I do not like that to happen at all.
But chance of that conflict would be much higher with Americans being so present in Europe? Because just the other day, I heard that the United States is preparing to send a naval ship to the Black Sea. And I'm pretty sure that the Russians are not going to like that.
No, and I hope they are not going to do it, because NATO doesn't have to be so offensive as they have been for last, let's say, 5-8 years. Mm. But if you had a split, then one party or Russia could easily be much stronger than the European countries. You know, today Russia knows that the superiority of the military power of USA is behind, and therefore that's stopping possibilities of doing something nasty, to put it that way.
You think there is a real chance or even an intention on the part of Russia to do something nasty to its European neighbors?
I hope not. But I can understand Russia, because when NATO got country after country, which used to be in the Warsaw Pact, you know, with the Soviet Union in the Cold War days, as members of NATO, it has been NATO advancing towards, let's say, Russia. Former President, I think Ronald Reagan said, that keep off our backyard. And that was a conflict when the Soviet Union wanted rockets on Cuba. You know, South America, and this is our backyard, keep off. Well, NATO has came very close to Russia's backyard, and I think they should not have done that.
But don't you see a contradiction here? On the one hand, you say that NATO should be mindful of not pressing too hard into Russia's backyard, but on the other hand, you want NATO to become stronger and Americans to keep their presence, not only presence, but dominance, military dominance on this continent.
No, I don't think, I think still that is logic, because when I do not, let's say, like that NATO has taken all the members, I has been part of it, but I could see it, if I see it from the Russian point of view, that there is, let's say, adversary, not enemy, adversary, NATO is coming closer and closer. I can understand that they don't like it, and that, of course, now you have the conflict with Ukraine, which I see as part of this happening with NATO.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Hagen, we have to take a very short break now, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Norwegian politician Carl Hagen. Mr. Hagen, just before the break, you mentioned that the conflict in Ukraine you see that conflict as a major part of the NATO-Russia struggle. And from what I understand, the Norwegian public opinion is mostly pro-Ukrainian rather than pro-Russian. Being here, having sympathies with Ukraine, being part of Europe, but also understanding Russia's sensitivities, how do you think that conflict could be settled? Because 5 years on, I think it's getting from bad to worse rather than vice versa.
Yes, it has. And of course, the Norwegian public opinion is formed by the newspapers in Norway and the television in Norway and the information we get, and that is anti-Russian and anti-Putin, as it is anti-Trump, what he's doing. But I just see that the West supported, not military, of course, but supported the coup in Kiev. I think that was wrong. It should have respected. And of course, Russia, as far as I know, Ukraine is partly Ukrainians, but that's also Donetsk area is a lot of Russian people. And people are feeling very much to an ethnic group. And if a part of the population of Ukraine wants to be part of Russia, you should have a referendum and let the people of the area decide. So I'm very much in favor of respecting the people.
But there was a referendum of that sort in Crimea, and you know that it's not accepted in the larger international community, it's certainly not in the Western world. 5 years into that conflict, do you think it may still lead Europe to a larger war? Because we had a major incident in the Sea of Azov recently with the naval altercation between the two sides. And I think the Ukrainians are actively trying to draw NATO in. Do you see any willingness, do you see any ability on the part of NATO to become more present in the Russian neighborhood as part of the Ukrainian conflict?
I hope not. I think NATO should keep off Russia's backyard, and in a conflict with a lot of, let's say, ethnic Russian or Russian-speaking people, we should keep off. And I can't understand why we shouldn't accept that Russia took Crimea with a lot of people from Russia on Crimea, with a referendum on at Crimea wanting to be part of Russia.
Now
we should have respected that.
I'm sure many people in Russia would like your words, but Norwegians are very influential at NATO. I mean, you have a Norwegian in charge of NATO right now. Why do you think that kind of rationale is not shared more widely?
Because the tendency is that to be and meaning what is politically correct, and what I'm saying is not politically correct. And of course, you say the leader of NATO. I sat 10 yards away from him in Parliament for many, many years. And Jens Stoltenberg, I know him well. He's part of the establishment, and he's surrounded by generals all saying the same thing. I'm trying to think myself. And NATO has come closer to and taken part of Russia's backyard. And that is not a very, you know, you have to respect that Crimea used to be part of the Soviet Union. There was a naval base there.
But it was also part of the
Tsarist Russia. There are rumors saying that Boris Yeltsin gave Crimea to Ukraine when he wasn't quite sober. Mm. I don't know if that's right or not.
That's a story I hear a lot here in Norway. A couple of guests related it to us as well. But, you know, one of the rationales that was guiding, I think, the Russian decision-making when it comes to Crimea was that even though there were documents and treaties signed before that against the change of borders, Russia could not bear to incur such a loss, the loss of Crimea. It was it was against the Russian national interest. And we see Donald Trump articulating quite the same logic that he can pull out from treaties or previous agreements because he does not consider something to be in the interest of the United States anymore. Isn't that an inherently dangerous logic if it's applied more broadly?
Yes, it is. And we don't like it. But we have to also accept that things are changing. Conventions, United Nations Convention and things can be outdated. You can't just say we are bound by that. The Refugee Convention from 1951 is the perfect example. And Donald Trump saw that American workers' jobs were being moved from America to China, to Vietnam, to Korea and other places. Something had to be done, and he did it.
Now, we are just a few months away from the European parliamentary elections, which are normally a very boring event, but not anymore, because Trump's former chief strategist, Steve Bannon, announced his intention to kind of shore up Europe's conservative electorate. Norway is not part of the EU electoral process, but I'm sure you're watching the events in Europe very closely. What do you think of this idea of an American trying to influence political developments in Europe?
Well, that's always happened.
But it was never so open.
No. But it's been there. It's been there for a long time, and particularly in the Scandinavian countries. In the Labour Party, the Labour Prime Minister of Norway has also taken part to help the Social Democrats in Sweden and in Denmark and so on, vice versa. But that's a result of globalization. You know, it's more and more the world. And of course, that's why you have also the nationalism, people looking more interested in what's happening in my country, thanks to Donald Trump, America First. And so therefore, that is exporting political ideas from America, which is what Steve Bannon is doing.
Yes, and you also have a very strong nationalist orientation. You believe in borders, you believe in sovereignty. Don't you see a contradiction here that this conservatism is also becoming a little bit globalist when you have an American trying to influence politics elsewhere? I mean, if you believe in borders, shouldn't you stay within borders, even in politics?
Yes, of course you should, but political ideas are going on the internet and it's going other things. So basically, yes, you should do that. But of course, if you strongly believe in an ideology, of course you want to try to influence that in as many countries as you can. And of course, it's been the conservatives, or part of the conservatives, who have been also interested in their nation. And that's what you can see happened in Britain. Mm-hmm. It was people, we don't want to get orders from Brussels. We don't want to be paying a lot of money to Brussels so that they can dish it out to other countries.
Now, you mentioned that for all your political career, you've been non-conventional and you've been populist before it became popular. The question is, how far do you think it could be taken? Because your party has been blamed for the association with Anders Breivik, the most notorious Norway's mass murderer. I wonder, I know that he left your party long before he committed those horrendous crimes, but I wonder if in the aftermath of that tragedy you had to reconsider, if not the ideas that you hold, then the way in which you express them.
Of course, I've been thinking about that. I have always said that force, weapons shall never be used. And we're a libertarian party. I'm a libertarian. I'm a fanatic supporter of the freedom of speech. And I've always maintained what Voltaire said. I will defend your rights to my death, to defend your right to say and mean whatever you do. So never use weapons. And that was a tragic thing which happened on the 22nd of July in 2011. Other people have tried to blame this on Progress Party. We have no reason for them doing that at all.
Well,
because we never have spoken in those terms. We have never advocated any of those ideas.
And to some extent, those kind of that kind of blaming is also populist, because you're trying to score political points off a national tragedy. Before this interview, I was reading Breivik's manifesto, and he rages there a lot about feminism, for example, among other things. And if you look at his upbringing, his relations with his mother, her psychological issues, you can see why he would develop that idea, hating feminism. But his mother wasn't a feminist. She was a child abuser. I wonder if the same conflation is sometimes at play in your rhetoric when you blame Muslims for what seems to me is a very unclever immigration policy. Don't you think that you're...
But I have never blamed Muslims for that. I have never done that. What I have said numerous times, don't blame it on the refugees or any religious, or what the Norwegian government and the Norwegian political parties are doing. Blame it on those political parties which have the responsibility for it. I've never... attacked or blamed it on Muslims themselves. What I have said is that everybody in Norway should respect the Norwegian legislation, Norwegian laws, the Norwegians, let's say, how we live in Norway, and also Muslims and other immigrants from other religion must adopt to the way we live in Norway if they want to live here.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you are on record spreading fears about Muslims' supposed conquest of Europe. And it's clearly not ideological or religious reasons that are pushing people to, you know, seek opportunities in Europe. Those reasons are primarily economical. You would agree with that?
The economic is the reason for them to come here. Yes, I agree with that. And that's why they want to come to get a good, decent job, which they can't get where they live. But what they are doing is they're in Norway paying much less tax. They are higher unemployment rate and receivers of public welfare goods, and they're too costly for the Norwegian country. But I agree with you. I've also warned that we should not have too many immigrants, because that will change the system in Norway, and it will be a potential conflict, as we have with the gang criminality in Oslo, which has now been reported as a result of too much immigrants.
Do I understand you correctly that that conflict has nothing to do with the religion of Islam per se? If it were, let's say, the Russians or the Jamaicans moving to Norway en masse, you would still have the problem.
Oh, no, it has to do with also the culture and the religion. And the Islamic religion is not like the Christianity, a peaceful, it's a war religion.
But come on, Breivik was also an adapter of Christianity, the way he understood it, at least.
Well, I can't take responsibility for what another person have done.
Now, since we talked about immigration, I think for quite a few years, any debate on how you structure immigration policy in Europe ran a risk of being accused of being xenophobic. Do you think now the leaders are more open to discuss immigration as it is, as a social phenomenon, rather than an ideological idea?
Yes, it's more now than it was before, but it's still a lot of those on the, let's say, the other political side from me, who are trying to stop the debate by immediately shouting, you're a racist, you're a racist. Now everybody accepts that the immigration to Norway is a challenge for our future. It's a challenge economically, culturally, and having a peaceful nation. That was not accepted in the 80s or the 90s, and that, when I warned about what could happen, I was labeled a racist immediately. But that is still used.
Do you still being labeled racist these days?
Oh, I've been labeled all the bad words you can think. I've been compared to Hitler, to Stalin, to Mao, and to...
What's your favorite among all those?
I've been called all the nasty things you can. So now, in my old age, I can say, if somebody points to me and say, you're a Nazi, or you're racist, or you're a communist, I take it peacefully, because they said it before.
Well, Mr. Hagen, we have to leave it there, but I really appreciate your candor with us today. Thank you.
Thank you.
I encourage our viewers to keep this conversation going on our social media pages, and hope to see you again, same place, same time, here on Worlds Apart.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, CommunityPublicRadio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.